This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. All this month on Vermont Public Radio, we're talking to the candidate seeking statewide office. And our series continues today with the contest for state auditor. Democrat and progressive incumbent Doug Hoffer has been elected to three terms in office, and he's seeking another term in November. Doug, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Good to be here.
I want to mention at the outset of this interview that we offered similar time to Republican candidate Rick Kenyon. We also offered to sponsor a debate between the two candidates. Mr. Kenyon declined both invitations and wrote us, quote, "I'm actually not running. I was asked just to fill the spot so there would be a name there." So we will not be hearing from Republican candidate Rick Kenyon about the issues in this race, but right now is an opportunity to learn why Doug Hoffer is seeking another term in office. Doug, I got to believe that a lot of people don't know how your office operates and what you do. You basically have some statutory duties that you're responsible for. Is that right?
That's correct.
And what are those?
Although this is a constitutional office, it goes back that far. The statutes are more modern. And basically, we have three tasks, among some other minor ones. Either perform or hire folks to perform the audit of the state's financial statements, the so-called CAFR, and perform the federal single audit, the A-133. The third is to do performance audits. The first two we farm out to a private firm. It's very complicated. It's time-consuming. It's challenging in terms of the number and type of staff. But most importantly, it leaves us free to do performance auditing, which is no more or less important, but it's more fun for sure. And I think in many cases, of more value to state government and to taxpayers.
So at your website, you talk about performance audits and also investigative audits. What's the difference between the two?
Performance audits are done to GAGAS standards, generally accepted government auditing standards, which are quite rigorous, particularly in terms of documentation, but also planning and every step along the way. So if we issue a 35-page report, you can pretty much assume there's 300 or 400 pages of work papers. The investigative reports are no less rigorous, in my view, but they don't have to meet those GAGAS standards, so they don't take quite as long. We can be a little more flexible about the process, and that's why. And that position had been utilized for communications by my predecessor. I repurposed it for this so we get a little more work out the door.
What are some examples of performance audits that you're very glad that you did in the last 2 years?
Well, we cover a lot of ground. State government's a big enterprise. We did a good one, I thought, on buildings and general services, looking at their work. They're responsible for capital projects, both planning and execution, although they typically hire contractors, and it's a lot of money. We looked at 10 projects that totaled or that were budgeted for about $90 million. And as it happened, we made some recommendations about how they can improve the process, streamline the process. And the new commissioner who came in a couple of years ago was very grateful for the work. And I think they've already begun to implement many of those recommendations, which is great. On the other hand, we did some investigative reports that I think have value as well. We did a good one on sole source contracting. Now, the state, as you may imagine, is expected in most cases to go out to competitive bid. There are instances where that's not necessary or appropriate, but those are supposed to be extraordinary circumstances. Well, I was curious about that, and we found that among the major departments that we looked at, 42% of all the contracts were sole source. Now, I know that the previous administration and now the Scott administration do care about this, not just because of the optics, but because if you don't go out to bid, you don't know if you're getting the best price or the best product. So I know they've made some changes in that regard, so that's rewarding.
So with an investigative audit or even with a performance audit, you find things, 42% of these contracts are sole source contracts. What kind of enforcement capability do you have?
Well, as they say, like the Pope, I have no legions. I can't compel anyone to do anything. And I'm not sure I would want to. That's what the job of the governor and the legislature, to oversee, monitor, and work with the various departments. All we can do is make recommendations.
And how do you decide what issues you're going to audit?
Good question. Obviously, you want to follow the money. There are some programs and entities that handle a great deal of money. They're certainly worthy of oversight. You might also look to departments or programs that haven't had any oversight in many, many years. Sometimes we respond to complaints or suggestions from the outside, citizens or the inside, state employees who might have information that would be of interest and lead us to do an audit, one of which we just completed at the tax department, that it was initiated by current and former employees of the department who brought to us some concerns. So it sometimes they're ripped from the headlines, as they say, as you know. So it's a mix of things, but the decision ultimately is mine in concert with my deputy and my senior staff.
Do lawmakers ever require you to do an audit?
Occasionally. Thankfully, it's only occasionally. We just completed a very small job that did not require the Gagas approach. It was more an investigative report on automated license plate reading, which you probably have dealt with or discussed with some of your folks on the show over the years. That was a small job. We did a couple of big jobs on sex offender registry that was requested by the legislature on two different occasions. So, yeah, they do sometimes, but typically they leave us alone. They make suggestions. Individual members have ideas, which is great. I want to hear from everybody. But we only have so much time and so many bodies, and they take a long time.
Have you ever had a situation where you did not get the cooperation from state government or whoever you were auditing?
They're not allowed to withhold materials that we need for the audit. By law, by statute, one of the same statutory provisions that authorizes me to do this work, it requires me to do this work, also says that departments must provide all records that we request, period. Does that mean they always do it willingly? No. Sometimes we have to dance a little bit, but ultimately we get what we need.
Also, at your website, it shows the audits that your office has done over the last 6 years, the timeline, and what you're looking at in the future. And it looks like there's an audit in progress that deals with the EB-5 scandal in Vermont. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that's something that's been of interest for a long time, but I knew that the state being in litigation, a couple of different litigious aspects to this, and as a rule, we do not audit a subject matter that is in litigation. We don't want to mix it up with those folks. But in this case, I was actually approached by the Attorney General last year who said, you know, I hope to clear up this one case, which, as you know, was settled, the Kiros case. But there's other cases that are still live. So I said, how about this? We'll agree to do the work if you can provide the material, which they had not done at that point because they were holding it for litigation purposes, and we will agree not to release the report until the litigation is settled. And on that basis, we agreed to go forward. They have already provided us about 600,000 documents. We have another few hundred thousand coming. We're working through them, and this is going to take some time, but we'll get there. And basically, the objective broadly is what did the state know about, or when did they learn about these concerns related to what became known as the fraud at Jay Peak and the related EB-5 projects? How did they respond to it, and what did they do? I mean, the litigation, actually, there was an attorney who brought a case about this very issue, and TJ, the Attorney General, has to defend these six named individuals. That's one of the cases that's being appealed and is still live. We're not interested in liability. An audit doesn't do that. That's not about legal liability. So we will just tell a story. It's a descriptive audit. That's all we can do because it's history anyway, and it's going to be dead before long. They're going to close the center at some point.
You know, I was interested to see that not all states have an independently elected auditor. I think about half the states do. Otherwise, it's usually a position that's appointed by the governor. So what's the argument for an independent elected auditor?
Some also have legislative auditors. Some have two. Interestingly, legislatures, if they have the resources and desire, have their own. But I think a case can be made for an independent auditor because I don't work for the governor. I don't work for the legislature. I work for the people of this state. Now, I want to work with all of those parties to solve problems. Once we identify problems, we want to help them resolve them. But I think it's inappropriate for someone in my position to be directed by another elected official because then I would not be independent and truly objective.
If you are elected to another term in office in November, are there some projects that you can look ahead and see and say, these are the kinds of things I want to do a performance audit on?
Well, I can say something generally. We often start with a discussion about how we can do a performance, a true programmatic performance audit, but it's many times challenging to get the data necessary to answer the question, is the program or project achieving its intended goals? It's hard to measure performance. The state's been talking about it for many years. They've moved the dial a little bit, but in many areas there isn't sufficient data. So we end up doing audits often about the nuts and bolts of state government, contracts and how they're done and cell phones, you know, everything under the sun. And they're important, and I've come to appreciate their value because if managers don't have the information we can provide, then they can't improve. But looking ahead, I'd like to do more programmatic audits for sure. I can't be in this job forever. I'm not Idi Amin. You know, I got to leave at some point. So I'd like to use the time remaining to do as much of that as we possibly can.
State Auditor Doug Hoffer is seeking a fourth term in office in November. Doug, many thanks for coming by and talking with us
today. Thank you. I appreciate it.